Welcome to the Quintessential Listening Poetry Online Radio and YouTube Podcast, streamed live from the heart of Washington, D.C. Here, you'll find a portal to vibrant voices, echoing souls, and an ongoing celebration of the extraordinary power of language. So, prepare yourself to join host Dr. Michael Anthony Ingram and his special guests as they explore traditional and spoken word forms of poetry.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the program. My very special guest is Genevieve Ray. Genevieve is a spoken word artist and poet from Bedfordshire in Great Britain. She's been published in 17 magazines and anthologies. She has worked in the theater as a director and a playwright for 6 years. Genevieve is currently working on her first book, which is due to be released later this year. I am overly excited to introduce Genevieve Ray. Hello, Genevieve.
Hello, Michael. Hi. And hi, everyone.
Hello. I am so glad that you're with me. I'm so glad we've been able to make this connection and truly bring about an international, I'm just happy. I'm happy.
I feel that. And the same. I've had such a joyful adventure, actually, into us starting to communicate. And the fact that we vibe anyway is just so, it feels like I'm already chatting to a friend and getting the chance to talk about all the things that we really, really love. So, so thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, let's begin this poetic journey. Genevieve, what is poetry?
For me, and I have thought about this very much, it is the way that humans chronicle our emotions and expressions. I think that the explosion in the industry of online poetry and the amount of writers that I've seen become first time published is no mistake during particularly the pandemic. I think it is the way that we record our feelings and have done for history. The fact that across history, poetry and history have fed into each other. You read some of the classic Greek historians, you read some of the classic Arabic historians, and their work is full of poetry, and yet they're recording human activity, human emotion, human love. It is the way we do that and always have. Every single person has had a variation of, I really want to say this to my crush and put it in their diary somewhere. It is one of the most natural human things you can do. It has deep significance. I would love to know if our very early ancestors used it as a way to tell their children's stories at night. I think it's something deeply natural to us. For me, it has been essential to finding myself and really caught me off guard. If you had asked me back in the theatre days, almost nine whole years ago of like work in between, I'd never have told you I was a poet. It really genuinely surprised me, but now I see it as integral to my being.
Integral to your being? That's such a strong statement. Tell me more.
I have been the person, and it's only through the responses of the dearest friends that I've known across the way that go, I didn't know. I'm going to quote somebody I used to live with. She said, you just kind of exploded. And I'm like, yeah, I think you got it right. I found my voice through poetry because, and for a bit of backstory for audience, really, a lot of things happened very, very quickly. The pandemic, Black Lives Matter, different bits and pieces. And I was seeing lots of responses. And I realized that the things that people were expressing already didn't fit my own reality, not even internal reality. I mean, external reality. And I found that poetry was the easiest way and quickest way to get the message I needed to say across. Could I do it in a page? Could I do it in 2 pages? I struggled writing novels and I'd got through doing a play text, but it took me a while. I couldn't do long form writing. Using rhyme, rhythm, songwriting and all the rest of it, I could say things that were essential and responding to really what was happening already in front of me and saying, whoa, 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 just to be really direct, whoa, 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 guys, this, I know what you're saying, but actually from experience of living through that, this is what, and on pretty much every segment of my identity at some point or another has been either requested as submission work or alternatively has been a chance to say, hey, this is what my experience has been. I've used it as my journey through understanding my own neurodiversity and learning really what I truly feel about things. So it has become like, I don't know if I can divorce myself from poetry. It would be a very long process if I did.
You know, usually I ask next, and I will ask it, why is poetry important? But I want to know more about the new person that emerged in Genevieve Frey. Tell me more.
This is sure. This is why the potential title of the book will be Free Roaming Adult Woman. It was a journey. Yeah, that's going to be its name, and that's one of the pieces I will read to you today. It was part of my journey into full independence and self-reliance. So realizing I could trust myself, realizing that people wanted to hear what I thought and would get my in-jokes, or even one of my dearest friends, Maria, would look into some of the statements that I'd made and want to do the research. I could connect to a poet in the middle of California and then another one in Bhutan. And I was like, what's happening to my life? And this is over a sort of 2 to 3 year period. And at the same time, people who I hadn't spoken to in over 6 years, not for any bad reason, lives move along, going, that really hit me. And I just didn't think, for the longest time, and this is as true as I can ever tell it, I didn't think my voice had value. And nothing, if I were to walk back through my life, nothing had told me that was true beyond thinking that sitting back and listening more than talking was required to be a good person. And over time, through not even fighting back, I think, so much as fighting for my own advocacy in a lot of areas of my life, I realized, no, actually, to talk out is to be a good person. Learn and listen as much as, because which I've been taught since time, but also try and reflect, because you never know who you might be helping without realizing.
Very much so.
And I believe in service.
All right. You know, it's funny. We are kindred spirits, because I, too, found my voice through the power of poetry late in life. I was in my early 30s at the time. And prior to that, of course, I was speaking, but something took on a different resonance when it came out in a poetic way. I don't know. It was just different. It was empowering. It was a different level of truth that I was willing to share at that point. I didn't care what anyone thought when I'm reading or writing a poem. So I do understand.
That is exactly it. Mike, you put it exactly as I would put it. That's exactly it. Something just clicked in a way
yes.
that I don't think anything else quite had served before.
Yes.
But, I 100% feel you in that. I really do.
So in a general sense, Genevieve, why do you think poetry is important?
I think it allows for people at any element of life, any social standing, cultural background, to have a voice. If my own experience was the only data I had to run off, it empowers. It is an essential empowerment. And because, as well, you can make it as cryptic, as literary, as esoteric as you like, you can directly just straight out speak to power. Or you can just sit there and write an ode directly to somebody you don't agree with from 10,000 years before you. It doesn't really matter. It, as an art form, is one of the most flexible And in my own time, I've played with it as much as possible. It's like Lego bricks. I can put this word here and make a joke there, and maybe no one will get it, but who cares? So many other art forms require you to be much more collaborative, which is absolutely mm-hmm. fine and actually a really mm-hmm. good thing. So many other art forms have a lot of rules and almost like terms and conditions to account as it. There, I have enjoyed, particularly being one of the senior administrators at Poetry UK, saying, I'm sorry, I didn't get a contract anywhere that said that's what poetry was. Yes, mm-hmm. there are smart guidelines, but they also change to do with region and era. And it's so essential that it forever is a fluid form, because writers speak to each other. And it's one of my favourite things about the community is how much they do talk to each other and have conversations within poems. And you'll go, I've been in that room. I know what that's about.
Yes.
It's like yes. a little mystery. And go for it, please.
No, I just want to expand on that and ask you this question before we continue. Why are you also known as Genevieve Fire Poet? That was interesting to me.
I'm so glad you asked this, because I wondered if you might. It's actually an in-joke. It's not going to be true. So I will give you the quick metaphor. It's been true since I was a teenager, and then how it came back, which I think life is very circular sometimes, and things that really have meaning do tend to return at the least expected moment. When I was a kid, and I used to daydream, and it's one of the ways, because I wasn't ever very good at going to sleep, so I used to daydream and tell myself stories in hopes that I would actually fall asleep. Got better over time. This emergent image always came up of this phoenix concept, which was that I would blow out all my energy, and anyone who knows me, including yourself at this point, knows that I give and I love and I share, and it's very expansive. You know, to have Jen's love in your area is probably quite a lot. There's intensity to it. So it's big fire energy, but I wanted to do that. And I had this daydream when I used to be really quite young that I would flow into space and just give as much as I could give. And then it would bang. And as the Phoenix cycle, I'd restart again. Friends would mention it back when I was a teen. But I then started using that for being the age that I am. All the MSN tags and everything was always Phoenixes. My little picture was Phoenixes. Phoenixes was the rhythm. And then I left it for a while. And then I started performing on Zoom and Instagram and other places, and people were like, oh, fire, fire, fire. And I was like, oh, it's come back. And I thought, you know what? This hasn't come without my, because I wasn't referring myself to myself like that for a very long time in the start. I was like, look, people are saying this to me with no knowledge that in my head this has been one of my metaphors. Then it must have meaning. And so I decided to embrace it.
Oh, wow.
I love things that come through if the universe is speaking without any connection. Like when someone notices something about you that you've not said a word to them about, that for me is like life poetry, if you will. It came back around after I'd actually left it behind. And I thought, right, there's a reason this is here.
Wow. So you sharing that it was the pandemic that helped that fire to create in a different kind of way. Am I correct?
100%. I'd actually stopped making formally theatre and had moved out of London before the pandemic happened, but it was actually quite a small window between. And looking back now, it's quite easy to create the kind of, oh, there was a synchronicity there. It wasn't that at the time, different circumstances. But like everybody, when we were all locked down, we didn't know what was going to happen. I just started to write, and poetry was the voice that came out.
Well, speaking of the voice that came out, please share a poem.
I am going to give you Free Roaming Adult Woman. So a little bit about this. It's, once again, jokes. There's a lot of jokes in my poetry. as a general sort of point, there'd been a lot of people who were generally surprised by my circumstances in life, you know, how my current marital status is, and wanted to kind of dig into a lot of things about me, and then tell me who I was, and I did not like that. So I thought I'd write a refrain that they should enjoy to tell them who I am. For I am a free-roaming adult woman. And here we go. Blood test booking, aubergine cooking, meeting leading, potato peeling, off the leash, hands to the ceiling. I am a free-roaming adult woman. Mortgage managing, calendar haggling, boss creating, boss commanding, lover filia, curly girl de rigueur. I am a free-roaming adult woman. Flouncy pink gingham, one bedroom kingdom, over talk the walk, walk talk the kingdom, up to the moonlight board of the hay babies. I am a free roaming adult woman, grateful for the side looks, growing to understand the sadness, paying back in lessons, becoming hard in the madness, future completely open door, Jane Doe to the chances. I am a free-roaming adult woman. Try rap because it's tough, writing new diamonds in the rough, falling in love with the gaps between the laser-guided stanzas, lifting my femme, my funk, masculinity as it hammers. I am a free-roaming adult woman. I'm free-forming. Struggle to get up in the morning. Chat your ear off if you let me. In jokes about Mia Angelou lines. If you get me. Free-flowing, free-spirited, 5G-roaming, grown-up woman. And that's all she wrote. Done.
Oh, you've got to share that again. You know how I am. You know, I was just settling in. Please.
Oh,
share it
yeah.
One more time. All right. I love that.
You know what? It's one of those things a bit like when you find gears on your car. It might go yes. faster. It might go slower. We'll see.
That's all right.
It changes
that's all right.
every time. Okay, we'll go. We'll go.
I wasn't ready for that. Go ahead. Share it again.
Okay. Right. I'm going. So free roaming adult woman. Blood test booking, aubergine cooking, meeting leading, potato peeling, off the leash, hands to the ceiling. I am a free-roaming adult woman. Mortgage managing, calendar haggling, boss creating, boss commanding, lover filia, curly girl de rigueur. I am a free-roaming adult woman. Flouncy pink gingham, one-bedroom kingdom, over-talk the walk, walk-talk the trading, up for the moonlight, bored of the hay babies. I am a free-roaming adult woman, grateful for the side looks, growing to understand the sadness, paying back in the lessons, becoming hard in the madness, future completely open door, Jane Doe to the chances. I'm a free-roaming adult woman, trying rap because it's tough, writing new diamonds in the rough, falling in love with the gaps between the laser-guided stanzas, liking my femme, my funk, masculinity as it hammers. I am a free-roaming adult woman. I'm free-forming, struggle to get up in the morning, chat your ear off if you let me, in jokes about Mia Angelou lines, if you get me. Free-flowing, free-spirited, 5G-roaming, grown-up woman. Done.
Oh, 5G-roaming.
Yeah.
That's why I need to hear it again. That is absolutely incredible.
Thank you. I love doing it. It's one of the favorite things I've ever written because it is the truth. I've had a lot of people talk at me about what my identity as a woman is from a place of lack, yet I feel so full. And enjoying every moment I get to grow a little more. It's a celebration of that, really.
Now, do you come from a literary background?
I think that's an interesting question itself. In a way. I used to try and work out if I could bounce on my parents' bed to try and grab at the books my dad had at the top of their bed. And books from mum. We are a bookie household, or have been a bookie household, and we've got some older pieces from older family. Obviously, I linked on the arts because I didn't have to worry about rules too much and got into theatre very early. And I studied it as my bachelor's degree. And it was going to Goldsmiths, which is a famed university in London, where the floor is a checkerboard, which tells you everything you need to know about the space. It's very free. It's a bit like Fame, but a little bit more edgy. It's a cool place. It's a cool place. So I guess by choice, I have loads of very bad literary jokes, almost like dad jokes for literature. I'm always I'm expecting people to hear me and groan.
Well, please tell me then about an early experience where you learned that poetic language had power.
I loved this. As a question, because I thought about it, it's like there's multiple interpretations of how you can do that. I, like yourself, I came to the form late. So anything that would be early would be like, it was 4 years ago. I know what, I want to share something about, and this was kind of partly on my dad's suggestion, actually. I want to share something about when I realized that the poetic language was. I fell in love, literary crush, with William Blake very early. The Tiger is almost biblical for me, I think. I can come back to that poem again and again and again. And I want to tell you a little story which I think you'll like. So, you know, good old book exchanges that you get across the little sort of mini libraries you can get outside of places and stuff. One time I was on the London Tube, which can be a very mixed space as it is, and somebody had left a copy of a translated meditation work that was really, really beautiful. And I thought, oh, they've left that behind. They might have forgotten it. But the way they set it, it felt like they would literally leave it behind for the next person. And I felt, well, I can't just keep it. I need to give something away. So I had a copy of The Tate, which is a gallery in London, an illustrated version of William Blake's collected poems, Songs of Innocence Experience, which I loved like I would love a child. And I was like, if I'm going to give something away, I'm giving this. And I was like, I hope if I leave that behind, that rhythm will keep going, that someone will leave a book and someone will leave a book and someone will leave a book and someone will leave a book. So I hope whoever actually picked it up, and I'm sure someone must have really enjoyed it, but The Tiger had so much in just singular lines. He's talking about the Industrial Revolution. He's talking about the fearfulness of an animal. He's talking about fire. He's talking about what's happening with London and the changes and the way that poverty affects people, all with the metaphor of a creature he may never have seen. And I know what a tiger looks like, but his tiger is like a machine. And now I sound like I'm writing a poem. I'm not. It just blew me out of the water. And I thought, and I hadn't, at the time in which I was really getting into him, which I must have been about 15, 16, I had no idea how much that would stay with me. And I think The Tiger probably reappears in my work every four pieces. I'll make a joke or a reference to it. I can't help it. It just, there's something, I'm so tempted to see if I could find a line just for a second. There's something so unapologetic about its writing, and it has stayed with me. Yeah, here we go. In what distant deep or skies, burnt by fire of thine eyes, on what wings dare heed by what the hand dare seize the fire? Fire again, I guess.
Yes.
It just, in every way, drew me. And at the time in which I was into it, that inspired more towards theatre. But on reflection, I think that was an early indicator of what I would believe poetry was.
Let's do something different. Are you ready?
Ooh. Oh, yeah.
All right. I found The Tiger online just now.
Ooh.
And what I'd like us to do, I'll take a verse, you take a verse. I'll take a verse, you take a verse. How does that sound?
That is the coolest thing. Yes. Let me just get it from Poetry Foundation. Yeah, right. Let's go.
All right. Now, this is my first time reading it, so you have to bear with me. But this is something I want to do this. Okay, The Tiger by William Blake. Tiger, tiger, burning bright in the forest of the night. What immortal hand or eye could frame thy fearful symmetry?
In what distant deeps or skies burnt the fire of thine eyes? On what wings dare he aspire? What the hand dare seize the fire?
And what shoulder and what art could twist the sinews of thy heart? And when thy heart began to beat, what dread hand and what dread feet?
And what the hammer, what the chain, in the furnace was thy brain, what the anvil, what dread grasp, dare its deadly terrors clasp?
When the stars threw down their spears, and watered heaven with their tears, did he smile his work to see? Did he who made the lamb make thee?
Tiger, tiger, burning bright, in the forests of the night, what immortal hand or eye dare frame thy fearful symmetry?
That was cool.
Well, I aim to please.
Hey, there we go.
All right. I like that.
All right. Me too. That was very cool.
I have to read more about William Blake. And it states here that was written in 1794 in an illuminated manuscript in 1794. Wow. Songs of Experience.
That's it. And what I love about his story, the more I learned it, because we got to study it in school when I was a little bit older, is he did his own typesetting. So he literally had to sit the blocks together and press them down, and he painted everything. His little books, if you can get a copy of it, are gorgeous.
Oh, wow.
They're really beautiful because he did everything, end-to-end publishing.
Well, let me ask you a question, Genevieve. And it sounds like you go by Jen. Am I correct?
Correct.
All right. I'm listening. Is a poem letting your guard down or building a wall? What have you found?
I must admit, this is my favorite question, because I truly believe there is no artist in the world. I'm going to get spicy now. There's no artist in the world who will not tell on themselves, particularly in their poetry, because there is, as I said from earlier, there's no collaboration necessarily. There can be, and there's plenty of artists who collaborate quite a lot on poems, but there doesn't need to be. Their view of the world, their perception, it doesn't even have to be as conscious of that, will come out. What words you use, what pictures, what colours, your expression of blue and my expression of blue might tell us both how our eyes work. So even if you didn't want to put a single bit of your identity by purely writing a single line, you tell on yourself and everything else comes. It can create a wall. And I know a few different artists who have a whole artist persona. Some that are, and he'll know when I say this, who I'm referring to, who are like a whole universe on themselves with multifaceted planets and a whole sort of serialization, and that is a different human to the human who you can chat to on the telephone. But even then, that is their visionary world. So in creating a wall, what does that persona need to do? I've questioned how much Jen the fire poet is me, and how much is the theatrical trained literary reading person that's always been there. And slowly but surely, the two have met between, and not much of what I write these days has a wall. It's mostly kind of, it's been one of those kind of days, right? Let's write.
Yes.
But different people have different things, but I think it is impossible for your true self not to appear a little bit, just because you will tell us what your experiential world looks like by the language you use.
All right. Please share a poem.
Absolutely. Now after saying that, I'm tempted to do Big Me, but I think what I'll hit, especially since we shared together with The Tiger, let me share the poem that is a story about how I started truly putting words together. This is way before I knew I was a poet. And it's called Four Eulogies. A line asked all the time, what was your first poem? A truth reflected. A truth accepted. It was a eulogy. Four eulogies. For songs about the lost. My writing career has been encouraged by offering catharsis where words are all we've got. Four eulogies. For songs for the lost. Two were for my family. Two were for my identity, the sense of family and ethnicity, ancestors and who we are. Four eulogies. For songs for the lost. Two requested by my kin, two drawn out from the world, needing and keening and trying to understand. For eulogies, for songs for the lost. Hours bent in research, trying to ensure the notes were in key and the truths were met with love. For eulogies, for songs for the lost. Two written before a title, two written after a naming, before I knew I was a poet, just a sad person with very pretty words. For eulogies, for songs for the lost. Large feelings and big sensations are still what draws the pen. Not a need to be heard or creative. Wails to the walls of existence. For eulogies, for songs for the lost. Finding the right story in some form of remembrance. Move towards literary deep dives and teaching art to others. For eulogies, for songs for the lost. One day, it shall be mine. Half etched into stone and half spoken in rhyme, I welcome the words of those I love so dearly and whoever feels the deep sorrow of loss. And done.
Wow. Jen, does it hurt you to write poetry? If not, why not?
Oh, wow. No, that is a... Yes, it has. I rarely write to... heartbreak, or if I were to create a war, I rarely write to heartbreak. I rarely write to eros-based love. I believe in the five Greek loves. I'm much for philia and storge, and community and brotherhood and sisterhood and everything else. But when I do, I will emotionally bleed on a page, I think, because I'm those moments I'm so conscientious, I try and hide it, and then I do create a wall. But I have actively, and the Four Eulogies is true, that includes when I was starting to truly write and share it out to the world, and people were reacting, going, oh, I didn't have no idea you felt this way, and I did pinprick my own heart to give myself ink. As I've grown my experience, it happens less, but every now and again I do get shocked. Go for it.
No, so if you think about the purpose of the eulogies poem, tell me more about that and as it relates to hurt.
The poem is completely true. One of the first times I ever wrote a poem was because I had a request from a family member to write a little something, and poetry made the most sense way before I thought I was any good at it or even knew that that's what I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. I spent, goodness gracious, I must have spent 5 hours collating as much information as I could about this person who I had my own expressions of, but I realised that really I wasn't talking to my own feelings, I was talking to the people corrugated together. Mm-hmm. So I actively got into drama student research mode and went so deep.
All right.
I interviewed, and then I allowed my own feelings to seep in as well. However, the two written for an identity linked to the loss of people, big tragedies that happened within the pandemic period.
Yes.
I just allowed myself to feel and ask if this was me that day, if this was somebody I loved that day, how would I commemorate? And grief was one of them, and it literally is just called grief. And it just was if I could take this away from you, if I had the power in my pen to do so, how would I say it? How would I understand? How would I tell you, the person who is missing somebody, that I am willing to sit down and listen and let you tell me the stories of them as a now ancestor? I think it did. It made it was a deeply emotional thing because I tried to dig into my humanity and my empathy.
So in terms of your work, emotions play a major role, all right?
Yes. Yeah, I would say that's true.
Do you think that someone can be called a poet if they don't feel strong emotions?
That's interesting, because also it would be at the intensity that they would say they feel themselves. I think absolutely. I would wonder, and I think I put it as a question, and I'd be that philosophically interested. I would wonder how deeply they could connect to their own work if they allow some emotion to come in. The work that I've felt the most connected to across the community has often been somebody really expressing something that they didn't agree with, weren't sure about, trying to understand. There's another artist who does philosophical deep dives whenever she writes, mm-hmm. And just allows for that. I would say it's not impossible at all. I would question what would happen if one chose to, and it may be that it doesn't need to do that for that person. It could purely be reflection. It could be their way of talking through philosophy. It could be their way of actioning themselves to do some good in the world before they, write about it, and then they do. But my experience and the amount of people I've had the pleasure of talking to about mm-hmm. how their creative process works, it's been a rarity to hear it. It sounds very diplomatic, but it's true. Like I'm allowing for the fact it might happen. I've been yet to really see it that way. I think that's the best way to put it.
Now, this is potentially a question I should have asked earlier. When you think mm-hmm. about your body of work, what are some of the predominant themes? It sounds like dealing with emotions is one of them. What are some of the other mm-hmm. predominant themes?
Oh, absolutely. I think I write odes to the five types of love poetry and love ideas that came from the ancient Greeks, because that was something that was very kind of seeded into my early English education. The idea of community, the idea of person to person, the idea of romantic love, love to the planet, love, all those kind of things. And that comes up without consciousness. I would look back and go, okay, that would go in that box and that would go in that box. I write in protest. I mm-hmm. really do. As I said, For You is a good example, actually, of what I mean by that. I write to the reality that affects the people that those things are happening to, rather than purely to just rage against the machine. Much more here, if you lack the reader, in this case, lack the example of a person with which this affects, let me introduce them by telling their story. Mm-hmm. And my most story-driven work is often actually protest work, even though I don't think it reads like that to other people. Mm-hmm. It's a way of saying, person exists in reality. They are somebody who's affected by these things, or they're somebody who loses out in this game, or they're, and I'll kind of pop it there, really. I believe education is best shared. One of my joys is this year I start to get to teach poetry in a much wider way, and I can't wait. I get to start seeding in some of my philosophy on this, and I think poetry study particularly, which is what we're doing, is about sharing, and almost kind of like we did with the tiger, hands are handing over to people and saying, hey, look, you're a writer, off you go. And so to encourage that in people, and it has been one of my biggest blessings in the last 3 years, the amount of people who said they started to pick up a pen through my sharing. I nothing in the world it means more to me than that, truly.
It has
pricked tears, I must admit, when people have told me that. Luckily they've done it in DMs, so they can't see what I'm reacting like, because I am a big girl's blouse. It always looks when someone says that, but to be told, it is. If it encourages someone to tell their story too, I have done my job.
Right.
I have done my job. If I have a mission, I don't know if I do,
Please share another piece.
All right. Absolutely. I think I will go with doubts. So this piece has been everywhere. It got picked up by three magazines.
Wow.
Me first. Yeah, I know. Mm-hmm. I was really surprised. And it was. I was having a legitimate moment with the devil of doubt, and I just sat there and I wrote it down. And I hope you enjoy. Doubts. The darkening of winter whispers into the ear of harvest children, and I am consumed with the spectre of doubt. He is a fine gentleman, double-breasted coat with silk lapels, and a sneer of contempt enough to cut creases into my forehead. Painstakingly, I duet with the commonality. His wife, imposter syndrome, claps joyfully from the side seats. He'll pick her up when he's ready. The siren of anxiety sings beautifully into a carbon microphone, her voice extended and tinny by the embrace of old technology, for she is the spirit that has grown old. Swept up in a waltz of worries, progression has been swift and sudden. Now it is a dull throb at my heels, and I feel the ache of waiting, the shame of nothing to report. His smirk is delicious, easy to fall prey to his wishes. As if I stop turning, the stage is his. So I write for the sake of thoughtfulness, and in turn change he leads. His bewilderment is delightful, for by ignoring fate and connecting to the internal fire that burns inside of me, a whole piece was written to spite him, and I walk from the ballroom in victory. Done.
Wow. Do you know where a poem is going when you start it?
Very rarely. I have the biggest envy for anyone who can actually organize themselves. I allow the muse to talk, and she will say whatever the phoenix inside of me will say whatever she's feeling. I made a joke recently, which I'm very pleased to have put on Facebook, where I said, to ensure authenticity, I leave at least 8 typos in every poem, so you know it's me, and also because I can't write on my phone.
Right.
And it's really the truth. I allow the freedom. I will often earmark each stanza as I go, especially if I'm going to put refrains in, so I don't lose the track, because some of them I do want to feel kind of like a song and etc. And one of my favorite things that I've done is collaborate with my cousin. He's a brilliant music producer, and I almost sometimes feel like I'm putting an earmark for him to go, I feel like that's going to be a piccolo. But when I start a piece, and that's a very good example, I said I was really feeling very bad about myself at the moment I wrote that, and I was like, okay, well, let's make an opera then. and make a piece that kind of really goes as deep as possible. Why am I feeling bad? What's going on in my head? Is this even reasonable? Okay, let's go for it. Those kind of pieces just happen. They just happen.
All right. So how do you know when the poem is done? If the muse is allowed to free roam, how do you know when the poem is done?
I appreciate the hashtag. Very nice. Very, very nice. The ultimate question. What do they say? No art is ever finished. It is only ever abandoned. I think I do. I call it the free poet. I do have a methodology for this, actually. I call it the free point pass, or the free pass edit. The first time around, I am writing semi-subconsciously, and then suddenly it will just kind of come to its natural end point, and I will look at it and go, wow, I don't know how to spell pathetic, apparently. Let's start that again. I always love it when anyone says, hey, I think you've got a typo there. Like, thank you, I missed that one. So I will tend to dig into it the second time around, and I'm also at that point understanding it outside of myself. I'm looking at it from the perspective of a reader. What am I telling them? Do I agree with myself? And on the third time round, it's like, okay, and now I might have to read this out loud, or now I might need to put this in something like a magazine or whatever. Will it pass edit? I'm quite stringent with myself. And through that, I re-understand the piece. I understand where the emotions are. I almost rehearse in the second pass what it will actually sound like, because I want most of my work to be something people can read out loud. And actually, people have told me for their own particular types of health needs and bits and pieces, reading out poetry is easier for them or hearing it orally. So I'm conscious of that because I want my work to be accessible. So the true answer is, if I am at a point where I'm willing to put myself through the 3-point pass, and I am my imposter syndrome wife character, she's harsh. She's very, very harsh. I would say at that point it's ready to do what it's going to do next. And that's when it can be handed over, if not abandoned.
All right. Please share another piece.
No problem. And it's literally right after it in the document. I will do The Muse Will Not Lift, which is my excuse for being lazy on a Sunday. But I do like the speech. I said bad jokes all the way through. So, The Muse Will Not Lift. Sunday will begin whence this poem ends. Lavender hypnosis has drawn in by torrential rain. It's the song to the pavement. Both woke her and it cradled her in equal rhythmic comfort, counting hour changes. The over-enthusiastic rectangle that has become our alarm, our calendar, our letters, our measures, our demon, maybe our Bible. It hummed every hour on the dot with partners from various continents resuming project making. Her ASD addled mind craved order. The muse shall not waken. Her curls are filled with delicious daydreams, heartbeat that pulses for one, while she recounts her shopping list. The muse will not rouse yet. She is a day ahead mentally, opening the file boxes of her emails, aware of a busy week ahead. The muse turns slowly. The crumpled curls have become diagonal. Mental health work has taught her nothing worthwhile is ever rushed. Panic is fully underprepared. Her hands still smart from a childhood of being told to slow down. Sunday is opening for her. Sunday can start now. And done.
You know, all great writers have great writing influences. You talked about William Blake as potentially being an influence. Who are some of your other influences in terms of writing?
Oh,
and what makes them great in your eyes?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Amazing. Maya Angelou, as the joke that's in Free Roaming Adult Woman, that poem has references to Phenomenal Woman, and very deliberately. When I read Why the Bird, Cage Bird Sings,
yes.
I was blown away by how she could create a universe in a line. She, the one that stays in my memory forever, and I can't directly quote it, but I can paraphrase it. She is with her new baby. And she is trying to work out how to sleep so that she doesn't lean on her little child. And her mum basically says to her, you'll know. You'll be okay. And I'm madly in love with any of her poetry, any of her writing, where she talks about her family and the variances between them, because she treats all of them like legends. One of my favourite pieces from her is, I don't think actually directly about her mother, but a mother figure going to speak to her local council offices, I believe it is, and the way that she moves through space that says, even however people view me, I shall be in this space. I do not care what you think of me. And it hypnotized me the way she wrote, and I think I almost hugged the book. I loved it so much. I have a love-hate relationship with Edgar Allan Poe.
Okay.
I should write him a letter. I have at least two poems that are somewhat references to him. I haven't actually included them in this section, I think his mystery writing and his lesser known pieces, though The Raven is a deep love of mine and I love to hear it recited, particularly by The Simpsons, it draws me in. I'm not as in love with his poetry as I'm his short stories, and I remember reading a massive book of it. But working through his collections, and I think he's somebody you have to read several pieces at once to truly feel him. I don't think you capture it in singular. It's like tasting various wine years from a vineyard. that was the 1992. Oh, that's the 72. Blended across. I always feel like that. And whenever I put wine references, I feel like I'm talking about Edgar Allan Poe in some way. And this may be incredibly spicy for the UK audience, but I am more of a Marlowe fan than I am Shakespeare, but I will always love Shakespeare. I think he writes character better than most people, and he truly gives every single character a voice. His sonnets, I once again have a bit mixed relationship. I love some, so I'm not so big fond of others, but Marlowe is the most dangerous storyteller in the world. Sometimes I'm like, I'm not meant to like this character. Why do I like this character? Everyone here is really, really mixed. But I do. Dr. Faustus was one of the first things I had to read for my degree and sideswept me immediately. I wanted at one point to write a variant play of a Faustian bargain in reference to him, and never could quite get it to where I needed to. But it's a dream I put in my back pocket. Maybe one day. Maybe one day.
Now, your background in theater seems to come into play a lot in terms of the way that you enunciate words, in terms of the emphasis you place on words. What is the relationship between your speaking voice and your written voice?
I find that fascinating. I am a dramatic person.
Okay. All right.
It's probably, if you went into my DNA,
I picked that up.
Yeah, you might have noticed. It's just like, I wonder if I'm less of came into theatre from the point of passion so much as theatre might have been the only place that could contain me for a while. But truly, I think it's that to share each other's universes, and I'll tie it to the personal voice in a minute, to share each other's universes, we only have so many tools. You know, we're all living our own thing, our own sort of life, our own experiences. So much communication is clumsy, and not in a bad way, but more the fact of, you know, how many times have you said something and regretted it and winced and gone, I meant it that way, but I didn't mean to say it this way. I was in that motion and you were in that motion, and we had two different plays running at the same time. Studying theatre, and it's part of the reason I chose to go to Goldsmiths, was to learn as much as possible about how people communicate and why this philosophy, the history, the psychology, and it's exactly what I gained for my degree. I'm so happy for it. And I think that's imbued in my writing voice, is if the person never heard me speak, would they still see the emotions I'm trying to say? Do I welcome them into this space? Have I made it accessible? There was a point where, particularly at the start of the pandemic writing part of my career, where I was terrified that I had made my language impossible. I was being too clever, I was being too quick, I was trying to put too many references and actually alienating the people I wanted to speak to most. And over time, I learned to let that go. And one of my, I'd say I have four poetry fathers. I've had four fantastic male mentors who've really given me a lot of their time, sort of taught me to just let it go and allow the audience to put whatever interpretation, let them run their play. And as my writing has changed, I have noticed the importance of state it, clear, put the pictures and let the person project their own image onto it. What happens when my own spoken voice comes back out is I can put those pauses, I can play, I can throw that joke in, I can enjoy the great Shakespearean training that I have had. But most of all, I am truly just doing it to represent what's on the page and to further welcoming the audience into the experience. I want to put on a good show. It's very important to me, because I think anyone who's willing to spare their time for art, and we all are running around like busy bees at any one moment, is investing in me in one form or another. So I will do my greatest for them.
Now, you are a spoken word poet, all right? What exactly does that mean? It means different things to different people. So what does it mean to you to be a spoken word artist, poet?
As I said, it's that transferal. It's taking what is on the page and adding in the drama that may not be apparent. It's putting character voices back in. I wish I was better at doing accents, I'm not going to lie. There's many times where I'm like, I would love to make that character have this voice or this voice. Not every single voice that appears in my writing is me or spoken in my head in my voice, even if that's how people may read it when they're reading it on the page. It is my chance to put the drama in. People in the moment, it's taking it closer to theatre. And for me, since starting to think about it, spoken word seems like the middle sister to the literary page and the literary stage in a weird sort of thing. And bearing in mind the history of writing, it's closer to how poetry began. You know, it was in song form, it was in festivals, it was on stages, it was the griots and the bards traveling across their different areas and countries. It is the surprisingly older sister, but in the literary canon that we've all been trained in or learned all through osmosis, it's treated as a middle sister. But actually, I think it may be something a bit older. So to do be a spoken word artist is weirdly, as I said kind of earlier, really me coming back full circle. It's bringing the theatre back into the writing. It's me trying to translate the emotions that first came with the work back out to the people listening.
Now, as we both know, so much has happened in this world, or is happening in this world. As I state every time I do this program, there's the good, the bad, the ugly, as well as the indifferent. What do you view as being the role of a poet in modern day society?
It is essential. We are an emotion-led or experiential-led journalist. That is what we are. And community journalism at that. So every single person who dedicates time to writing and sharing their experiences in the literary form, they are adding to the canon. Even if they never release it, it disappears into people's diaries and of the stories I've been told. People saying, oh, I found my dad's writing and I was wondering if I could do something with this, which is proof. It is a form of ancestry. It's a form of keeping a record of the world that isn't purely date focused, time focused. Look at this pretty golden queen with this particular prince's face on. It's life and experiences, and doing history is one of my favorite A-levels. It is one of our secondary sources. What did people think of the time? Let's look at their poetry. Let's look at their diaries. It will always have purpose, regardless if we decide it doesn't, because we use it when we're looking at our ancestry. We use it when we're looking at our history, songs that we love, the stories tell our children. How many times do they rhyme? It has relevance regardless of how community treats it. I hope as time goes on, we learn to give it the space in our society it already encourages, because it has no expectation. It has no invitation clause. Anyone can do it. Anyone can choose to do it and use whatever language they speak. I forgot to mention earlier when you said about our writers, Ramona Lofton, who is Sapphire, as in the writer of Push, which is what the movie Precious comes from. Yeah,
yes.
She's another person. And I love in that book how Precious learns how to write, and that is fed into the book and all her different thinking. Those are the kind of writers I have to adore. That's why it's essential, because I don't think we can remove it even if we wanted to.
Well, let me ask this question. Okay, we know the world we live in and all those things. Are we compelled to write about what's happening in the world, or can we just write about rocks?
Oh, 100%. Once again, it's the beauty of human difference. If whatever you want to write about, it's possible. It doesn't need to always be grand statements and performers about what it is to be a human. It can purely be, I love this green stamp, but why do you love it? What reminds you of it. Oh, your grandfather gave it to you, and it was one of the last memories you have of him. That tells you something about humans. Oh,
yes.
So we use stamps. What are stamps for? Well, we use them at this time to get one piece of data to another person, and sometimes there would be 22 weeks between, depending which country they're in, and that's what the stamp's for. Sometimes it costs this. Okay, so now I know how ideas travelled before certain ideas could travel. I know how much it cost when it was a penny and five buttons. In our way of writing, and I've realised something I'm much more passionate about than I thought I was, in a way of writing and the way we choose to write or whatever we choose to write, as I said, we inform about what we know, even when we're wrong, even when we maybe slightly misinformed, when we have a take which we may not have considered that carefully, we're telling people as soon as we ink it down, our perception, at least at the time in which we wrote it, and if we edit it multiple times, and I think it's always good to actually look at your work and re-edit it, see if mm-hmm. And it's what I used to say to writers when I was training them is, do you still agree with yourself? Are you over that heartbreak? Are you over, not over that loss, but have you moved on in your journey of loss? Have you learned stuff you never knew? Have you met the person who you represented in hate and now you're like, oh god, no, actually no, Ian, have you found a new way to love yourself, which means that the thing you said about yourself before is just not true anymore? Have you found mm-hmm. something about yourself you didn't like and now you realize you want to change? You know, that journaling has become such a core part of mental health practice given by psychological practitioners, I think it says a lot about how we're starting to recognize the value of these things, to review yourself, review the world you exist in, and for the time in which we are here. And you can see that also there's a little bit of fatalism in me, but I hope it's a very positive fatalism. What a wonderful chance to let ourselves and other people know as much as we can. My parents have very much instilled in me, and not in like a grand lecture, it's just the way in which they behave, and the same with a lot of my family, knowledge is a gift, and when people share their knowledge with you, they are gifting you something. And I think it's just one way we can do that.
Please share another poem. I enjoy hearing you speak.
Oh, thank
you. I enjoy listening to you. Yes, I really do. I'm enthralled by your work. I'm enthralled by you as a individual. I mean, really, this is fantastic.
I am deeply honored, Michael, for that, and it's such an honor to do this and be here. I'll tell you what, I'll do a bit of a choice for you. Would you prefer something that's literary and takes and shows that literary stuff is for everybody, or mm-hmm. would you like a romantic poem?
A romantic one.
Okay, this one's a, ooh, I shouldn't be going this direction kind of poem, and it's full of references to tarot, because I find it a deeply fascinating practice and all the different bits of it. So it's called Devil May Care. I swam in the whirlpool in your ocean blue irises, sinking to the bottom, the gentle seabed, your widening pupil. Felt the pole shift as you try to forgive yourself for a mini admitted sigh. Your north, my south, we align perfectly for a single breath. I can't set call his name. His title won't leave my lips. He taunts us on the 15th card. He might know before we realise. Having to approach death and the crumbling tower, who knows what will come after this? A cast arcane geometry with the meeting of two wrists. Above my head is almost a sun salutation, all because we dance together, we blend together at the seams. Watched a perfect synchronization as we step in a tango, neither of us chose to lead. We cannot surrender salvation, yet something else pulls our strings. Can't whisper his name. His salutation won't leave my lips. He taunts and taunts me 15 times. He knows before we ever realize. Asking death if I can borrow a steed, waiting to crumble under the tower. Who cares what comes after this bitter sweetness? And end.
Wow. Jen, to what extent is any poem a woman's or a man's?
Oh, what a fabulous question. Intriguing. I think I've almost been trained to believe, and I do almost wonder if this has come from my artistic training. As soon as it is declared to a page, it dies at the hands, and it is already passed on from the author. I would say, and I'm now thinking about, like, Free Roaming Adult Woman very much feels like mine, but there are several poems I would say, even though they reflect my experience, no longer belong to me as soon as they have hit it. I don't know if I'll be able to find it beforehand. Now I really want to read you a piece that's called Death and the Author, which is literally about the fact of, can I even own anything once I give it out to somebody else? Because as soon as it's in somebody else's eyes or in their ears, it's their variation of what I've said. I'm willing to surrender my ego enough, and especially with the training that I've had from my amazing forefathers, that if it is no longer mine, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
I'm happy to be a conduit to what I am saying, feel inside my soul, if you will. If one were to... go for it. Go for it, Michael, please.
So poetry then does not have a sex.
I don't think so, and particularly because I have really great non-binary artist friends. I don't think so. I think it can take on characteristics, but particularly, and it's something that's another driver for this particular development of this collection, I've seen artists tell me what woman is when I don't agree. And once again, trying not to get too spicy, and I've been told things about myself in other people's odes that I'm like, that's not, if you have tried asking me, if that's how I experience the world. So I don't think it can be gendered. And once again, it transforms, it transmits by every single person who takes it into their hand. My experience of William Blake's The Tiger and your experience of William Blake's The Tiger and will be different. So it will immediately be informed by that person's own experiences. At least for me, no, it has no gender.
You know, when we read through the stanzas of Tiger Tiger, there was a power. I don't know, just a strong sense of understanding or wanting to understand the world, a world larger than oneself. That's what I took from it. Again, that was my first reading. So what does your work say, Genevieve, about being human?
I think at this point, at point of recording, which is one of my favorite jokes recently, at point of recording, because who knows what it'll be like in a year, is about the ability to take control and take your voice. I think if there, even the last five pieces I've written have been either, I probably write once every 2 days at this particular moment. But it just happens now. I don't even have to think about it too much. To intend to write a poem is a weird feeling now. They've been, this is me. Hi. Or I realise this, or this is my new resolution to this, or thank you for this learning friend of a friend. I realise now what you meant when you said this 5 years ago. That's like been the rhythm of the last five that have been penned down this 2023. So it is the empowerment of utilising the kindness, compassion, support, investment, whatever you want to call it, of the community around you. That's really has become my voice. How do I pay it back?
How do you pay it back? Assisting, I don't like the word helping because that means you're pulling someone up. Assisting someone find their voice is so important. It sounds like it's very important to you. How would you begin that process to assist an individual find their voice? That's what I want to know. And let me say this too. The reason I'm quiet, I'm just totally amazed by your thinking. I really want to know as much as I can, and we don't have a lot of time for me to do it. So I'm just basking in what you're sharing, because mainly because there's an international difference, it's just refreshing.
Thank you. I like what you're going to make me cry. Don't do
don't
that
cry.
With the audience
will
hear.
Don't cry. No. I'm just telling the truth.
I wanted, mate. I'm glad we don't have this on camera. No, thank you so much. It's an honor.
I don't know what to say to you. I don't know. You've said everything. What else can I ask?
Jen will say everything. Now, that's a joke. My family, if they are at this particular point listening in, are killing themselves right now. It's like, yeah, you know my daughter. Talk too much. That would be right.
No.
No, it's true. I'm just messing. I'll let you into my trade secrets. Listen, and literally, if I am to support someone, if I am to help them to believe in their art, and this is going to break so many people who DM me when I say I actually almost ignore them when they first say to me, I am a da-da-da poet from this country. I'm like, great, that's cool. That's what the cereal box says. Meet you.
Oh, wow.
And vice versa, when someone says to me, and I've had this in my ambassadorial lessons, the things that are coming up with the teaching this year should be this as well. Equally, when someone says, I can't write, I don't think I'm any good, I'm like, I don't believe you. But let's see. I believe, and truly I do think this comes from the drama study, mm-hmm. Let's put it on the laboratory table. Let's take it into the rehearsal room and let's find out what the truth is. So one of the first things I do is I go, okay, great, cool. Well, share with me what you have, and I will legitimately share you a lesson I taught once to an incredible writer, she really is, who was having a problem getting in her own way. She was so convinced that she wasn't, and I said to her, and I, if I can put something on an epitaph, this would be what I will say to anybody who wants to write, collect the gems, build the crown later. The gems, build the crown. I remember, and this is a group of quite young people, and I all heard them go, and I was like, yeah, I've got them. Because it's true. It's better to, and I have to say it to myself sometimes, because I am very good at putting things to the last minute. It is better to have something. You know, what does King Lear say? Nothing comes from nothing, so speak again. Exactly that, you know. Allow for it to be messy. And so when encouraging someone, I'm like, be messy in front of me, I don't care. I'm here to support. And often as I dig through the gems, I go, wow, that's shiny. Goodness, I never thought of it that way. And I sometimes have to try and put on the professional face of being like in awe of the person I'm talking to, going, I knew you were good. You just don't want to, you don't, because whoever, and one of my favorite questions recently to ask people is, who is this father, mother, non-binary parent, this spirit that tells you, who are you trying to meet? Are you speaking to William Blake? Are you speaking to Shakespeare? Who has told you you are not good enough? Because I'm telling you now, they're not in the room with me, and I'm telling you I can see you're good enough. If I had let that happen, particularly the time when I felt most like I had to, you know, the four eulogies moment, most had to speak to suffering that was going on across the world, I wouldn't be talking to you right now for sure. Mm-hmm. I had to get over that fear. And as I said, when my demon of doubt appears, I write at him and go, I am going to outdance you, my friend. Let's party. And it's what I encourage people, because you can always throw it away. You can always trash it. You can set fire to it. It doesn't matter. As soon as you have created it, you have given yourself the permission to at least try. Wow. And in whatever format that comes, and I practically change the language to suit each person. And it's why my DMs are always blowing up, I think. Mm-hmm. I will always say that, and you can start, as we both talked about, we both started quite late, realistically, and I'm similar age, you know, I'm in my 30s now. Yes. There's no magical bit going, oh, I'm sorry, you've missed the books, the poetry. Mm-hmm. Oh, you can be 100 on the last day of your life and be a writer that day. I'm yet to meet a 2-year-old poet, but I'm sure they exist. I think most parents would say their 2-year-old is a poet when they're trying to work out what they're saying. Oh, that's what you mean. And I say that as having a 2-year-old niece. it's a fluid form. Always be. I think I wake up in gratefulness that I get to do this and people are into it. One of my favorite artists, and he does something very different. He's a show creator, producer, and he does real life plays of D&D and stuff like that. So very different segment of life. But he said it once. He says he forever wakes up in what he calls bewildered gratefulness. He never takes it for granted. Mm-hmm. He never expects it to survive forever. For every day, he's like, why did this work out? And then he goes, and thus I have a job to do. And I remember hearing him say it on a podcast, and it stayed with me immediately. I was like, that's how I want to live, in bewildered gratefulness for every second I get to do this. What a joy.
Wow. Well, we've reached my favorite part of the program. This is what I view as being a mini MINI poetry concert, where you take two or three of your works, mm-hmm. you share them back to back, no interruptions from me. Jen, you're on stage.
Amazing. And I've got the big doc with me, so I now get to have fun and go, what do I feel like doing?
Yes.
Okay, I'm ready to go.
Yes.
Do you still want me to, by the way, do a little introduction to each?
Whatever you like. Whatever you'd like to do.
Well, tiny bit of introduction. So I get asked this all the time. Well, how do you do it? How do you do it? What's like it when you're writing? How do you do it so quickly? I have a poem for that now, and it's called Trance. 6 minutes. The full 360 seconds to find the epicenter, some form of meaning. 6 minutes. I feel my mind floating the wonders as words become pictures, pictures become feelings. 6 minutes. Half-lidded eyes, headphones slightly tinny, darkening my room, keeping water with me. 6 minutes. There. Found between beat one and beat 50, the guitarist sighs before the harmony. Pause. Tapping fingers, motion out synchronicity. Recapturing a soloist's tears. Why does that remind me of home? 6 minutes. Countdown now as the seconds drop away. The timer moving slowly, digital sands falling. 6 minutes, 5 breaths slowly. 4 shifts of the body, 3 presses of the volume. 2 blinks, suddenly. 1 piece finished completely. Awaken, edit, done. And that was Trance. And now I'm going to do the piece I said, just to have a bit of a different flavour, called Ophelia. As my old joke for this poem goes, it will go as fast as my mouth can do it. This is a rap poem / spoken word piece talking to giving Ophelia from Hamlet a much better ending of a story. Ophelia. Ophelia sits in the garden of corn. She's picking up weeds for her heart to adorn. She's given up distance. She's given up space. In the primrose of her tomorrow, she's losing the race. She's surrounded by pink flowers. She doesn't know their name. She wants to dip her feet in the river of her shame. But as much as she is lonely, as much as she is alone, she's singing to the insects. She's talking to the stones. The woods are growing over her, building roads from her soul. She's sinking into the ether, into the grasses of her throne. She ignores the distant rumbling of society pointing blame for sitting in separation, floating in her fame, failing, wax smile continuity, and all paint blush, sidestepping out of reality, green feet under brush, stalking in the silence where the art harlots roam. Daisy Chain Fortress. This is her tomb. This is her home. And to the joy of Michael, I have been asked multiple times to do that slower so people can hear the words, which is exactly what I'm going to do now. So Ophelia, version 2, at a much slower speed. Ophelia sits in a garden of corn. She's picking up weeds for her heart to adorn. She's given up distance. She's given up space. In the primrose of her tomorrow, she's losing the race. She's surrounded by pink flowers. She doesn't know their name. She wants to dip her feet in the river of her shame. But as much as she is lonely, as much as she's alone, she's singing to the insects, she's talking to the stones, the woods are growing over her, building roots from her soul. She's singing into the ether, into the grasses of her throne. She ignores the distant rumbling of society pointing blame for sitting in separation, floating in her fame, failing wax smile continuity and an all paint blush, sidestepping out of reality, green feet underbrush, stalking in the silence where the art harlots roam. She's building a daisy chain fortress. This is her tomb. This is her home. And complete.
Wow. Do you think, given all you know and your lived experiences and coming into the whole poetry realm late, as we talked about, do you think you were meant to be right here, being a poet?
At this point, at point of recording, yeah, I think this is a culmination of everything. My mad love for art, my obsession with understanding myself and understanding other people, my want to encourage the art in everybody and the belief that they deserve space, and particularly as the book develops, the journey of this is my mental health journey, this is my experience of learning my neurodiversity and everything else, come with me and know you are safe and understood. It has become the most safe form, but equally at my darkest moment, it has protected me and given me a chance to talk to people in a way that I just never could before. So if I, and I do, I question that, if I believe in destiny, then this was destined. If I don't, then I am thankful for the opportunity to have found it and keep me finding it every day.
You know, you answer my questions before I ask them, so I don't know which direction to go in. It's kind of like being in a labyrinth. I don't know which way to go. And one of my guests this past week used the word labyrinth. So if he's listening, that's where I got it from. All right, because I wanted to ask you, what surprises you most about being a poet?
It never runs away. I think that I will feel the deepest loss, like I broke up with somebody. If it ever ran away from me, or somebody couldn't do it anymore. What did I do? Come back to me, please. I'll clean the dishes, I promise. I'll do my chores. Yeah, I can't even imagine that world where it just isn't there anymore. After being so integral, but yeah, like it's given me language. I say about jokes, I said, like, I find that there's a lot of rhythm, and I find that there's humour in cycles, as they say, like, a joke becomes funny three times over, like, first time you hear it, like, ah, second time it's okay, and then third time suddenly it's funny again. I think about that whenever something reappears and it comes from the mouth of somebody else, I'm like, is that God speaking? Maybe. It's like, this person doesn't know this person. So in my everyday, and anyone who knows me well will know this, I consistently crash my sentences together. I had one wonderful friend once say, and he was a mentor in theatre actually, don't worry, I speak very clear Genevieve. I was like, good. Poetry is almost my excuse to just talk like I actually do, where I'm like, this thought and this thought apparently connect. If I was to move to a different format, I don't think I'll ever stop making art. I have literally used it to try and put myself to sleep as a child. I've used it to find identity, to find friends, to find a community that I felt connected to, and also taking from people saying, you know, yes, you've got this, use this and do this and whatever. And as I said, paying it forward, I hope, in the future. If a new format is what is destined for me, I will embrace it. I think that this can catch me where at my darkest moments, at my most beautiful moments. It's a way to tell people I love them in multiple ways. And it's been used at weddings, funerals and everything else, bar mitzvahs, yes, etc. You know, I would be sad if it, I never happened again, but if it was to move on all of a sudden and suddenly Jen was no longer a poet and she was something else, I would accept it. But for what it has given me, and particularly the sheer amount of wonderful friends, I hope it never does, if I can ask such a thing of the universe. Yeah.
You know, I've been a bad host. I've been a bad, bad host. You want to know why?
I mean, one, I don't feel like that's true at all. So part of me's like, really? I think you're fantastic. Please.
I never gave you a break. I never thought we were going to take these little musical breaks. I never gave you one.
I think it's as I said at the start, we vibe.
Yes.
Oh, go for it, Michael, please.
Look, we've almost reached the end of our poetic journey, but I am going to give you a little break, and I want you to answer this question when we return, all right? What's next for you creatively? Where do you go from here? Ponder on that for 45 seconds, and we'll be right back.
Fantastic.
We are back. I am Michael Anthony Ingram. I am here with Incredive. I even blended your name, Incredive.
I like it.
Incredive. Genevieve Ray. Genevieve. Where do you go from here? What's next creatively, my friend?
I have, as in my list of blessings and gratefulness, had so many wonderful artists want to work with me now and say, hey, I'm doing this, do you want to be involved? And stuff that I feel like contractually I can't say yet, but like,
yes,
really, really exciting things. I think I am taking myself on the road. I am traveling. If I have a regret in life, I did not travel much in my 20s. I threw myself onto studying as much as possible, trying to work, and
yes,
also graduating initially into the global economy credit crunch that was 2008 was,
yes,
not easy. I will now give myself the ability to travel, to take my work to people, to be out. I hope a one-woman show at some point. That's,
oh, wow,
not been planned. That's a hope. I have some really incredible people to learn from who want to collaborate, and as those come out, I'll be sharing them. To feel the investment of people seeing me for who I am, it's time to embrace it and take it as far as it will go.
Well, when you plan your one-woman show, please let me know so I can fly over and be in attendance.
Absolute joy, especially because then I can take a drink afterwards. Oh,
right,
I'm done.
Serious.
Done. Absolutely
right.
Done, mate.
Tell me about Poetry UK before we go. Your many fans, being administrator, tell me all about it.
If it's any sign of how Genevieve Ray operates, it is this. So I found Poetry UK very early on in the pandemic, and I thought, oh, it'd be interesting. It could be a place for me to put my work. I've never tried to put my work in a online forum. Why not? And very quickly, I was aware that there was one singular administrator in a very large grouping, and I have been in that weight of everyone's asking you questions and you feel very stressed. And I reached out to him, I DM'd him and went, hey, mate, how are you? And it was a lovely gentleman called Paul. Hey, Paul. And I said, how you doing? I'm good. And he said, do you need a hand? And he went, really? I went, yeah. You've got a brilliant forum here. It's open. I like your rules. Can I help? Can I be here for you? Because I have been there at midnight trying to solve a million problems.
Yes.
And it's wearing. And we got to know each other. I always associated him with Green Hearts because that's usually how he signs things off. And I threw myself in and I took it as the opportunity. Can I write policy? Can I improve the legality of things? There are industry things that are specific to poetry because it's all self-reflection, which means people aren't always respectful to each other because they're
true.
So from their own perspective. How can I foster community? Can I use this as a learning thing? Hey, I'm stuck in. I'm not moving anywhere except for when I walk my dog. let's use this to learn. And I threw myself in. I would get DM'd with problems. Why is my poetry not here? Da, 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 da. It is mm-hmm. one of the best forums where you can be anyone. And I almost think of it as the grandmother now of poetry in the UK on Facebook. The amount of groups that have flown from it, anthologies mm-hmm. from people who wrote and collections who wrote and they're starting. Wonderful Charlene is one of the people I always think of who've gone on to here, who's gone on to here, who's gone on to here, who's gone on to here. Mm-hmm. It's kind of granny now. You go and visit Poetry UK every now and again and go, hi, granny, thank you so much. Can I have a mint, please? Because we've been here the longest. But and also Paul's initial work, and it's expanded the admin team. It is a joy to come in. I'm usually the hammer. Somebody's mm-hmm. not behaving or not being polite, they see Jen. Yes. You know for yourself. You're going to get married. This is what is this? It has led even how I met the collaborator I'm working with to start doing the teaching is through that, because he was advertising looking for new artists. Big shout out to Montel and the Attentive team. You are my family. Mm-hmm. It was literally like that. It's about five things that are now my day-to-day solidified thing that Jen, the poet, is known for, came from me giving my time to Poetry UK to support Paul, to support the team, to be a voice and say, hey, I'm mum, come to me if you need stuff. Yes, I'll sort that fight. Yes, I'll sort that policy. Right, I'll work that out. Even the first time I ever performed on Zoom came from an opportunity that was advertised there. It has been the grounding. It is my local community centre.
How can people then stay in touch with you? Through the Facebook group, or are there other ways as well?
A million other ways. Facebook itself said to me, hey, yes. You advertise so much of your writing on your thing. Do you want to change your private page to a public one? So I have a formal public page, which is literally Genevieve Ray. Come on down. It is slowly transforming into, even to the point that I wrote a new policy statement on my own public page mm-hmm. to make sure that people were respectful to each other, because at point of recording I have 2.5k followers, which would blow my mind. Wow. People, yeah, wow. I can't explain that one either. I don't know, it's happening. So that's one of the bases. Genevieve Fire Poet on Instagram. Mm-hmm. That is where I do Instagram lives with the incredible Queen Emma, as she is well known. Daniel of Schultz, so many wonderful people. And I do a lot of performing through there. People are also welcome to email me, GenevieveFRay@gmail.com. That's probably the best kind of ways. I find my different life bits are meeting in the middle at this point. I probably need to start thinking about getting a publicist.
Yeah.
Potentially.
Yes. Yes.
But yeah, those are the best places to meet me.
You know, I want you to return, all right? I want you to return twice. One time is when you finish your book, all right? Mm-hmm. I want you to come back, share from your book. But I also want you to return with some of your friends. Bring your poet friends
joyfully.
With you.
Joyfully.
I'm serious. And let's do that one later in this year, whenever you want to do it. But I want you to come back and bring some people with you.
Happily. Oh, I already the invite list. You're going to regret this one, Michael. It's going to be sizable. Yeah, I've got some of them you've met already. But yeah,
we'll work.
I mean, you just invited me to a party. I'm bringing a gang. Yeah, no,
one.
I will.
Not plus 25.
No, I 100%. I'd happily do so. Would do so. Thank you so much.
Well, I don't know what to say other than thank you so much for being you, being authentic you, being
thank
authentic you.
You. I think I said it right at the top, but I mean it. I have been so excited about this. The chance to talk to someone I'm already getting on so well just on a pure factor. I hope we keep on DMing. Let me know about everything going on with the fam.
Yes, same way.
The invite for you to come over, please, 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 let's go and have a beer. But it's been a joy to just go back through and have a great laugh with you. This mm-hmm. has been not just one of the best interviews I've ever had, this has been just one of my best life experiences up to this point, mate. I didn't even give you
100%. You know, 'cause I didn't know what to say.
I'm so... Welcome to the road show.
Oh, that makes me happy. That makes me happy. Well, I want to thank you, Genevieve Ray. She's incredible. There's so many adjectives that I could use to describe you. All positive, of course. Thanks again.
It's been an absolute pleasure. As I said, this is less of a goodbye and see you soon, really. Yes. And we'll keep on chatting. And I hope everyone has a fantastic evening, afternoon.
Yes. Thank you so much. And here we go, everybody. Wow. As I share with the listening audience every time we're together, let poetry ring somewhere throughout the land. Take care, Genevieve.
Take care, Michael.
All right, bye.
Quintessential Listening, Poetry Online Radio, is available on iTunes, Spotify, SoundCloud, and Stitcher. You can also check out the website at qlpor.com.